All right. Well, I've got a really challenging presentation here because I'm trying to look at the big picture worldwide and my 45 years of experience working with humic substances. Okay. And I'm going to try to get through it. I'm not going to belabor some of the things that have already been mentioned. How do I move this ahead?
You have to use the up and down arrows right here.
Okay, I'm used to a Mac. So,
well,
okay.
So
all right, good.
All right.
So, here we go. 1973. I saw a little ad in Montana Farmer Stockman. I had a little ranch up in Montana. Bad soil, overcompacted problem. I never heard of humate. I was a university graduate, member of soil science in the Oregon Society of Agronomy. I'm primarily an entomologist, pest control advisor, however. But anyway, on my own ground, you know, with some corn, sweet corn seed I had laying around. Okay, let's try this stuff. I don't know what it is. It looks like dirt. But okay, let's go for it. I need something. It was called Clodbuster. I had clods. It worked. Okay? So that's 1973. So I saw that with my own eyes. And I've always been a farmer, too. I've always owned farms. I own a farm in Oregon right now. So I'm looking at it from a little different perspective than a paid researcher. The only paid research I've ever done is entomology. So why does this thing wane and wax over the years? You know, I've seen a lot of interest build up, and then it wanes. Some of the research is inconsistent. A lot of it's just worldview, I think. But it obviously, so-called humates, if you get the right thing, at work. Okay, let me get that. Okay, so... Okay, it's not moving ahead.
It's not moving?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to hit that button.
Oh, okay. All right. So then we moved on to potatoes, seed potatoes in Flathead Valley. I had enough confidence from my own tests on my own farm that I went out with some of my clients. And like I say, I'm a pest control guy. Okay, so we went out there and we did some 20-acre plots on seed potatoes using this raw humate, which is tested out about 35% humic acid. And the treated was dramatic. I mean, the rows were closed, the plants were bigger. You can see the difference between treated and the untreated right to the row. Okay, now you can't see, because not definition isn't fine enough, but the untreated rows had tremendous amount of insect feeding damage on the leaf. The leaves are perforated. The treated had little, if any, insect damage. Okay, so as a idealistic young IPM specialist, you know, I was excited because I saw something there, and that's kept me going since 1973, because that holds so much potential to eliminate toxic technology and just general economic benefit to the grower. So what are the problems that held this thing back? Okay, well, I can tell you how farmers react. I can tell you how I react. Dirty and dusty. Looks like dirt. It's not a product. It's hard or impossible to apply in dry form. Yeah, and it may plug up your drip irrigation. How can these small applications possibly work if the benefit comes from organic matter? What makes it work? Is it trace elements or hormones or what? What are the products with, why are products with the same humic acid analysis having different or even negative effects? You could take two products, and I did. I mean, I got every product out there. And, you know, some would have the same analysis based on the simplistic ANL analysis and have totally different results. And, of course, that's part of the problem. You know, some farmers would try it. You'd do test plots. You'd get results. And then somebody else would come along, some other products or something. They'd try it. No results. And then that just confirmed in their mind or reinforced snake oil. See? And so that negativity would cycle through the decades, okay? So it's difficult to handle. That's the first problem. It was dusty and blown to the next county when you tried to spread it. Plus, a regular spreader couldn't spread it. And the liquid humic acid had lots of problems. It was incompatible in tank mixes, and farmers don't like separate applications. I was in the custom application business, too, in Idaho. And we put it on. We had to apply it for them because we had to have specialized equipment. Okay, so over the years, I developed a process to solubilize and granulate. So now we have a nice clean product that can be mixed with urea, chemical fertilizer, organic fertilizer, you name it, in its soluble form. You know, it's around 70-80% soluble versus your dirty, here's your messy, dirty stuff that blows into the next county. We take this stuff and make this stuff. Okay, so now you have a soluble granular. Now we got a product. So now you have something that can be blended, direct application, aerial application, everything. Okay, and then the next question, how much you use? Nobody knew how much you use. It was kind of a guess. It's hard to know how much you use if you don't know what's in it. So this is where I started my worldwide travels and my worldwide networking when the internet was introduced. And I was living in Hawaii, and I was working on, I won't go into all that, but so based on some Russian research, they worked out the numbers. Okay, so here's your dosage in kilograms per hectare, here's your concentrations, and then here's your yield increases. So there's a sweet spot. Here's a sweet spot. And then it goes down from there. You add more, it goes back down to about the level of the control. So you got to know the sweet spot. If you don't, you might be down here and say, it doesn't work, it's snake oil, it doesn't work. No, it does work, but not. The rate has to be right, and it's kind of low. Surprising. Okay, so then here I am in Hawaii. I don't have any equipment. I don't have a big lab, but I got a farm. I got a greenhouse. Okay, so working with Russians, I learned about seed bioassay. And so we just soak seeds. The Russians use cucumber as an indicator. They have specific genetics, which are responsive to humic substances. So they can take those particular seeds and then soak them at a specific period of time, different concentrations, and then analyze the results. So the controls versus the treatment, and then different treatment rates. And then you can see the top growth and all that. Now, I could go through this for hours, but we don't have hours. Okay, so bottom line is, you see, if you don't see increased root growth and fibrous root growth, you don't have anything. And this is something simple you can do in you know, a couple weeks, right? It's the only tool I had. I'm a farmer, okay? Not a university researcher. Okay, so here's work I did collaborate on with a Russian researcher who's pretty famous, Dr. Olga Yagominkov. And this is where we use seed bioassay. And here's a bunch of different products. I'm not going to tell you which they are, although ours are up here. These are different rates, and then soaking seeds and then measuring root length. So it's a quick, what I call a root length bioassay. And you can see some of the products either go below the trend line, you know, really don't do anything, or actually reduce growth, have negative effects, and then maybe come up again, or have a steady increase. So from this kind of testing, you can tell some products. This is a Chinese product here, one of those imported products. I'll take one pot shot. So there's some products out there. That's my point. There's some products out there that do not work. So if some guy tries it and it doesn't work, he just generalizes across the board, humic acids doesn't work. Yes, yeah, some don't work. Some work. How do we know the difference? And then here's some work I did Oregon State University on seed germination. It's just germination speed test versus the root length. Okay. So here's what it boils down to me. Humate seemed to be the most researched plant biostimulant in the world. I have filing cabinets full of research I've gathered from all over the world, including China, which I had to have translated into English by chemists in Honolulu. Okay, so there's no shortage of research. Okay, and so, you know, working with other researchers and doing testing on my own farm, we came up with some of the answers. Now, I'm not going to go into all the good things that, because Russell mentioned that, and you can go to my website or other websites and see what the, here's what the ASASAA book says. Okay, so let's say, yeah, it works, it does stuff. There it is. Here's some research. Okay, so now what I had called Cold War with humates. Okay, this is the race between Russia, China, and the United States in understanding humic. Russia and Chinese humic substances research was not well known or not taken seriously. It's like, oh, what do the Russians know? They only invented soil science. What do they know? Okay, so information sharing, collaboration can speed adoption. We have to work together. Not bit by bit, little bit here. Yeah, it works on a little bit on blueberries, but we don't know, blah, blah, blah. So let's see what the Russians have been doing. This is what they say, yield increase. Everybody says the same thing, okay. Okay, here's the work they did on what is the yield increase on various crops. Here's corn, here's buckwheat, here's grains, blah, 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 you know, rain. Okay, yeah, increases yield. Quality, vitamin C, beta carotene, sugar oil. Yeah, there you go. Okay, so how do they figure out how it works? Okay, could they use a total bioactive rating here, see? So if you look at this is Russian humate products from Russia. Here's Gumat. It compares nicely with our product. And here's the functional group percentages. So they add up the positive functional group or the biologically active functional group, deduct the inactive functional groups, and come up with a score like 86% bioactive. Okay, so that's like the pedigree of a humic acid product, is the functional organic compounds. Now, these functional organic compounds, you're looking at as many as, well, I'll underestimate, but some of the data shows 700 to 800 different individual compounds within these overall functional groups. So humic or fulvic acid is not one thing. That's why it does so many things. How can one product or one molecule do so many things? Well, it isn't. It's a lot of things working together, you know, and we try to pull them apart, but you can't. But you can determine bioactivity based on an index. Okay, I could talk about that all day. The Chinese, different. They're concerned with results, just like I am more. They're really, what does it do? And they're really interested in the pest management aspects, the disease control aspects, which really interested me. So I collaborated with them, and they tested my product in China. It was the drought and frost remediation branch, and their big focus was drought and frost remediation. That was their real focus. And, of course, it does that. It provides some protection against drought and frost. Chinese are pretty far ahead of us in terms of actual application. And of course, the same basic things they're saying as everybody else seems to say. Okay, so here's some facts about fulvic acid, but I won't go into that. And the properties, that was a, you hear that again? The properties of humic substance accepted worldwide, and this is like everybody, Chinese, Russians, everybody. Chelate, improve nutrient uptake, phosphorus, blah, 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 soluble minerals. You can all go to my website and read all that. Yeah, okay. Humic fractions have different effects, different molecular weights. Okay, so then we developed fulvic acid, and we got finally the big problem of labeling and what the hell is it and how much. I won't say it's been solved, but at least we have a label. At least we can make an actual claim for hydrophobic fulvic acid. And so our product is one of the first, if not the first, I'm not sure, that's registered in Oregon. And I'm not sure about it, other states. But we have actually the first fulvic acid product that's actually registered as fulvic acid in the state of Oregon anyway. And that's just the beginning. And then we're looking at, you know, new methods of testing. You know, really, really kind of high-tech stuff. You know, the next step may be molecular genetics. We know that the humic substances affect these pathways, or genetic pathways, okay, that provide pathogen resistance. So that partially answers my question of why I saw the insect resistance. So we're looking at this kind of thing. This is molecular genetics. So substances within the humic matrix, or the polyphenols, or the tannins, trip or activate pathways that provide stress response and longevity. So we're up to a whole nother level of science and technology that's beyond me. And this is young researchers in Germany that did this. But it seems to be the answer to how humic substances work, by activation of genetic pathways that provide resistance, plant growth regulator responses, a whole range of stuff. Okay, see, both tannic acid and humic substances modulate three known longevity pathways. Yeah, TGF, beta signaling, PTHR, blah, blah, blah. They seem to modulate the same molecular mechanisms of growth enhancement and resistance. Okay, so the next level of science is taking this to computer modeling. So we computer model, we put as much data as possible, all this biochemistry and molecular genetics, and it's computerized because all humic products have different makeup and different effects. And if you can computerize this and then look what are you looking for in effect, then you can go to the computer and come up with which humic substance or combination thereof is going to get the result you're looking for. So I've been doing this. Our company's been around since 83. And if you want to go to our websites, humicproducts.com or bioag.com, this will be there. And lots of other stuff. Lots of other stuff. Anyway, questions?
Thank you, Ron.
I'm amazed I got through that. But like I say, I mean, there's a lot of information, so, you know, you can go back and look at the details later, but I'm trying to get the broad picture of it. Is there any questions?
Yeah, we have time for a couple of questions.
Surely, after all that, there's got to be one question.
Well, actually, you mentioned something you really don't know the answer. Sometimes it works or not. My 36 years of experience has been based on soil mineralogy. Even Rush can actually put more emphasis on that. If you have a most monolite soil, illite soil, vermiculite soil, humic interactions are completely different. In some of the like illite soil, you may see that secondary. I did first year research, nothing shows secondary chemistry. Then these are your plot. I can't believe what's going on. We send the lab, we analyze. So I think the reason is those are some of the things Dr. Oak was talking. We need to really substantiate those facts because depends on. Last year I had 1,700 farmers in my talks. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows the mineralogy of their soil.
Well,
nobody knows the family of their soil.
Yeah, well, that's not really where we're coming from. Like most, a lot of the testing we did on these products were done in aeroponics laboratories in Berlin, Germany, where we weren't even using soil. We were just determining the effect on plant growth, root growth, et cetera, what fraction, et cetera, et cetera. The ruling out that level of complexity. You know, what is it doing? I mean, how it interacts with soils, I did that work last year in Oregon. How it affects microbial biomass versus fungal biomass, and how that affects soil structure. So, it's complex. It's considered the most complex chemistry on Earth. So, yeah, you could debate it all day.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Go on to our next speaker.